May it please the Court. The issues here are basically three. Whether or not Renee Ekstrand was disabled and entitled to accommodation, whether an employer satisfies its obligations of reasonable accommodation under the ADA by making changes that do not effectively address the disability, and whether or not Ms. Ekstrand was constructively discharged by virtue of Somerset School District's failure to accommodate her and continued ill treatment of her. The district court found that she was disabled. The undisputed evidence does show that she was substantially limited in major life activities of sleeping, thinking, concentrating, learning, working as of early to mid-September 2005. At least four times during that period, she asked for an accommodation, which is a room with natural light, because she suffers from depression and seasonal affective disorder. And it is undisputed that the school district knew that she suffered from this malady and that she needed natural light. Yet, every single time that Renee asked for a room, which happened to be absolutely empty, she was told no. She was never told no, let's talk about something else. She was just told no. This case is a perfect example why employers are required to engage in a meaningful interactive process to determine what, if any, accommodations can be made to enable an employee to continue working. In this case, Somerset claims, and the district court found, that it accommodated the plaintiff because it installed some regular educational tools that it needed in order to make a room that had never been used as a classroom into a classroom. That is not an accommodation. These educational tools included a map, overhead projector, a desk. The important thing to keep in mind about this situation is that there were two rooms that these two first grade teachers were required to teach in. They had never been used as a classroom, so they had non-diffuse fluorescent lighting that went directly down onto a work table. So they were inappropriate for use as a regular classroom. The Somerset School District, in response to both Ms. Ekstrand and the other teachers' requests to fashion the rooms into a regular classroom, included changing the fluorescent bulb into some other fluorescent bulb simply to make it a non-dark workroom and make it into a classroom. This had nothing to do with Renee Ekstrand's need for natural light. The other issue was these two rooms were located directly across from the cafeteria. So during almost 2 hours of the school day, it was insanely noisy because people were either eating lunch or they were walking by the rooms because it was a high traffic area. So the district also tried to address the situation of the constant noise by installing some sound panels in the cafeteria that, again, had nothing to do with Renee Ekstrand's need for natural light. So the undisputed evidence is that the changes didn't effectively address her need. She wrote to the principal on more than one occasion telling her that she was struggling. She wrote to the superintendent after she went on leave and told him that the conditions did not meet her needs and that she needed a room with natural light. The thing that's odd about this case is that the entire time that Mrs. Ekstrand was requesting this room, the room was available and would have cost the district nothing to give her. Not only did Ms. Ekstrand request a room with windows, but other teachers, seeing the problem, came forward and offered their rooms, and still the district did nothing. They didn't say, let's sit down with Renee and talk about what would accommodate her. They never even offered her a truthful, credible reason as to why she couldn't have the room with windows. This case is like the case in the Giles versus United Airlines case, where the employee was asking for a reasonable shift transfer, and they simply wouldn't grant the request without more. They didn't sit down and go through some other ideas. The requirement for an interactive process, according to EEOC versus Sears, is that there needs to be a flexible give and take. Once the employer is aware of the need for accommodation, the employer has the obligation to sit down with the employee and have an interactive conference where, if they don't want to provide the accommodation requested, they need to offer alternatives or at least express a willingness to discuss alternatives. That never happened in this case. Four times, both before she was placed in the room, after she was placed in the room, and after she went on leave. A total of six times, actually, she requested a room with natural light. Six times she was refused. Six times she was never offered an opportunity to sit down and discuss an alternative. Like the employer in Gile versus United Airlines, the employer in this instance flunked its obligations under the ADA by failing to have an interactive process. Had they done so, they would have learned that the classroom changes they were making in order to make a workroom into a classroom had nothing to do with the employee's disabilities and weren't even close to an accommodation for her to enable her to continue working. The last issue is whether it's constructive discharge when an employer places an employee in a situation that results in the employee suffering a nervous breakdown and continues thereafter telling her that her situation won't change when she returns. The defendant's conduct was even worse than the conduct that has been found to constitute a constructive discharge in cases such as Brooms and Taylor, where words were used to threaten an employee. In this situation, conduct threatened the employee, and it resulted in her actually suffering a nervous breakdown. And after she suffered this nervous breakdown, she writes a letter to the superintendent, having gotten nowhere with the principal four times, asking for the accommodation, never getting the accommodation. She writes a letter to the superintendent and explains all how it all happened, how she loves teaching. This is a teacher who loves teaching. She's a good teacher. She's a teacher that, as families request year after year, this is not a slacking, whining person. This person is a devoted, awesome teacher, and she suffers from depression and asked for a very modest accommodation, which was readily available. When she didn't get it from the principal, she went to the superintendent, wrote him a letter, asked, told him all of the situation that had led up to her needing a medical leave of absence. And she asked for a room upon her return, which she planned to return in January. She asked for and received a 3-month medical leave of absence. The intention always was that she returns in January, refreshed, ready to teach in a classroom with windows. Superintendent's response, he didn't respond to the letter. Then she made a meeting appointment with him and met with him in November, approximately a month after her leave had started, and explained again that she needed this room. And he said no. He didn't say no, let's talk, let's figure something out when you're ready. He just said no. She had absolutely no reason to think that she was ever going to be accommodated by this employer. And therefore, when it came time for her to come back to work, she was unable to come back to work. That, the refusal to provide the room, and discriminatory conduct after she went on leave made it impossible for her to think she could possibly return. Unless I hear questions, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Certainly, Ms. Skinner.
Mr. Ebert.
Good morning. Judge Crabb found at the district court level that, in fact, there was an interactive process here. There's not been a lot of discussion from the appellant with regard to whether she was a qualified individual with a disability. Obviously, that's a point that we have addressed extensively in our brief as to when that occurred, and it's something that Judge Crabb had addressed as well. In the review of the briefs that have been submitted to the court, it appears as if the interactive process is being made an end unto itself. I think the key that needs...
Let me tell you that I find this interactive process stuff so much verbal fluff. Doesn't really matter. What matters to me is whether there was a substantive entitlement to an accommodation. Now, if I understand the statute says employer must make an accommodation that will help the disabled, that will enable the disabled person to work. It's a substantive obligation, not an obligation to yak, but actually to act. So the question in this case, and whether something is a reasonable accommodation depends in part on its cost to the employer. Now, one of the accommodations requested here was a switch of classrooms with another first-grade teacher who was willing to give it up. And that looks to me, not knowing all that much anymore about grade school organization, having not been there for a while, it looks as if that's the sort of accommodation that can be provided at close to zero cost. So I looked in your brief for the explanation about why that requested accommodation was nonetheless unreasonable and didn't find it. So what am I missing? Why is that not a reasonable accommodation?
Well, I think in terms of how we've presented the argument, and you're correct that, and in fact, counsel is correct, that there were opportunities to switch rooms. What the decision was on behalf of the school district was the issue of having to use these two first-grade classrooms in rooms that were not normally used by the district was because of a situation where they were having overcrowding and they did not have
enough
space.
No, you're not addressing my question. Another first-grade teacher apparently agreed that she would switch rooms with Extran, and this other room apparently had windows, right? So why was that not a reasonable accommodation? It would have solved Extran's problem, at least so she describes her medical condition. And I'm looking for the explanation on the school district's part about why the costs of making that accommodation were so high as to be unreasonable.
I can't make a point in saying that the costs of doing that made it unreasonable to do so. The point that I was trying to get to, and I should have got to.
Look, I understand completely why the school district converted this space for use as a classroom. The question here is not why this space was put in use for a classroom, but why the school district assigned to it the very teacher who couldn't tolerate full-time artificial lights, when at zero cost, so far as I can see, zero cost, that problem could have been avoided.
Well, you're right. In hindsight, that could have been avoided. But what I was trying to get to...
This isn't hindsight. Extran was telling the principal that at the time.
But, Judge Easterbrook, what I wanted to get to was the fact that that was an accommodation that was preferred and was available and might have ended up being the accommodation that wasn't provided by the district. The time in which this problem with Ms. Extrand in terms of her mental health condition manifested itself in an intermittent way once she began teaching. And the worst part of her time there was just shortly before she took a medical leave of absence. Now, during that time, she was not under medical care or medical review of any kind with respect to that. The district was simply wanted to try something to make the room something that could be worked with. And in fact, if you look at the brief that it was presented by the plaintiff, the appellant, they indicated and agree that perhaps that was not where you would start. You don't have to start with switching to the room. You can make other changes. In fact, Ms. Extrand herself made changes at her own expense to try and make the room usable for her. They made responses over a short period of time.
I don't think you're getting the basis of my concern. There were two kinds of problems with the new room. One was the kind of problem that any teacher would have. It's noisy. The lighting was harsh. There wasn't an overhead projector, that kind of stuff. The other was a problem that only Ms. Extrand would have. That is, she had a serious problem with depression. The school district then proceeded to deal with the problems that any teacher would have and never tried to deal with the problem that was unusual to Extran. Now, that's why I was asking why this swap would have been too expensive or difficult, because that's the question of reasonableness.
I'm not saying it would have been. I'm just saying that And I think the district court found, and I think the plaintiff agrees, that you didn't have to start with that. There are other things that you could have done to make that room usable.
That would have solved the problem instantly, though.
Perhaps. But I'm not sure that's even the case. I think one of the issues Judge Crabb had indicated was that there wasn't any evidence in the record to indicate that that would solve the problem necessarily, or that these other things that were tried ahead of time.
Was there anything in the record to show that the absence of natural light was a large part of a problem?
Well, I think the big part of a problem was depression, and I don't think it wasn't just the fact that there wasn't windows.
The depression is aggravated by the fact that there's no natural light. She has to have natural light to reduce the possibility or the pain of depression.
That's what she advised.
That's what the record shows?
That's what she had advised them and talked to them about. That doesn't mean that you can't...
Was there any support for that position other than hers?
Pardon me?
Was there any support for that position that she urged other than her own testimony?
I don't believe there was. I do not believe that there was anything from her physicians indicating that she needed to have that particular room or that she had to have windows in order to function. And as I said, one of the reasons that, on numerous occasions, the court has said in its decisions that the employer has the prerogative of looking at how these things are going to go and can take input, obviously, from the employee as to how to best solve that problem. But that shouldn't preclude them from taking other steps that were calculated to address that. And that's what would happen. Now, perhaps if they would have made the change, that would have been an issue that could have been addressed. But we don't have that situation. We have the situation where we tried something first to try and make it work that way. Now, I think the issue in terms of what Judge Easterbrook had mentioned about the other teachers being concerned about the very same things, I'm not sure it's really quite the same thing, because the complaints that were coming from Ms. Ekstrand were the fact that she was getting stressed out by the fact that that this was not a very good room, and she had perhaps a little bit of a different situation than the other teacher who had it. The other teacher, it's a matter of inconvenience for Ms. Ekstrand. It ended up being something that aggravated her condition. I'd like to briefly talk about the issue of constructive discharge here. Interestingly, the appellant in her brief says that her resignation, in July of 2007 was the time of her separation from employment and her resignation, but she was actually constructively discharged much earlier than that, but doesn't suggest precisely when that is. I think in terms of the context of the constructive discharge argument, you have to look at the conditions that were in play at the time. My time is up. Oh, I'm sorry. She had been off on her leave starting in October 17th of 2005 and never returned to work. During that time, she got two extensions of that leave until she resigned in 2007. And during that time period from the school year of 2006 to 2007, not only was she on leave from the district maintaining her employment status, but she also began work as a teacher at South Dakota State University in South Dakota. Brookings, I believe, is the location for that. And she then was offered a position for the 2007 and 2008 school year. It was only then that she resigned her employment. My time is up. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Ms. Skinner?
Let me ask you a question to begin with. Is there anything to support the position that a room with natural light would have alleviated her disability?
Yes, sir. Her treating psychologist, in both the testimony and affidavit, says it is her professional opinion that Ms. Ekstrand would most likely have been able to follow through and return.
Was this after the event, after she's already quit, or was this tendered to the... to the school district before?
Her report, in order to get the medical leave of absence that Ms. Extran needed, she submitted information from both her treating doctor and her treating psychologist. And,
at that time, each one said natural light would solve the problem.
Psychologist did. The doctor kind of confined himself to her physical problems. But, yes, it has been made clear in several pieces of paper that were submitted to the district that she needed natural light.
Do I recall one or the other of the doctors or some other doctor who said that she couldn't teach at all because it was too stressful?
No. That was the district's position. The doctor said that three doctors said she couldn't return to Somerset because of what was happening.
She couldn't return to the school district, school district?
Yes.
That was the only thing that excluded?
Right, because she started suffering from PTSD symptomology, having nightmares. The principal was standing on her, jumping down on her.
Nothing to suggest that, however, if they gave her a window or a room with normal light coming through, that would solve the problem?
Yes, that was clearly stated in testimony and in an affidavit from her psychologist.
At the time she was requesting this change?
Yes, right after she went on leave, the psychologist wrote a letter to the district, and also the plaintiff herself did so. I have just 1 second. I just wanted to say, as far as the constructive discharge goes, she fully expected to return in January, and the undisputed evidence from her and her treating psychologist was that had she been given a room with natural light, she could have returned in January. Then the bad treatment started thereafter, denying her sick leave banks, things that didn't make any sense, treating her like some kind of pariah.
Yes. Thank you very much, Counsel.
Thank you very much.
The case will be taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess.